Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breeze.
What's up, what's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show and back by popular demand. The famous Claudio Grass from Global Gold, from author of Safe Haven, author, I don't know, how many books have you written, young man? Welcome aboard.
No, thank you very much. Well, not too many books, a lot of articles.
Okay. All right. Well, you're an author, and you obviously you're a free market kind of guy, and, you know, I think you lean more to the libertarian type of view. But so, Claudio, what are you seeing here in the world? It looks kind of like a mess. What are you seeing about it around here?
Oh yeah, basically, I think it's a complete mess. You know what we see right now in the States with Comey and Trump impeachment and all that stuff. You know, it just shows. You know, I mean, the deep state in the United States really has a problem with Trump, and they are trying, you know, to get him out because they really want to protect the status quo. When we look over in Europe, you know, we had Macron elected in France, which basically is the establishment elitist statist guy. He has raised and breed, you know, by the government. So he also, you know, stands for the status quo. So that was, you know, short term. That gave, you know, that's why we have seen the euro is going up, because people still believe, you know, that's good for the eurozone. But I think in the mid and long run, Macron basically is just, you know, the end of the euro. Of the eurozone, because it just shows that the European politicians, they don't grasp what's going on, and they're not willing to change, you know, the way they think, to change, to go come up with reforms which are definitely necessary in the eurozone. And then, you know, we have the Middle East, which is still burning, and we have North Korea, which is a topic. And you know, I remember the last time when we had an impeachment against a president, you know, of the United States, Clinton. I think that was back in 1999. That was also when, you know, Clinton decided to bomb ex Yugoslavia, the Serbs. So, you know, interesting. I don't know what's coming. But as I said, you know, I really believe, you know, this is the guys, the powers that be are in favor of chaos and disorder.
Oh, we know Christmas is coming. Other than that, we don't know much else. But, you know, I mean, I let's start with France. And I say that the French backed out. They chickened out at the last minute. Not that Le Pen was the right choice, but I think Macron was certainly the wrong choice, in my opinion. And the status quo around the globe will eventually create some sort of revolt. But certainly you're seeing it play out, because obviously Donald Trump is not the status quo. He is a guy that wants to get things done. And because of all the backstabbers and the crappy system that we've gotten ourselves into because of letting these guys be in office so long, let them steal all the money, it creates the much bigger problem globally. What say you?
Yeah. You know, the status quo is basically going to you know, impoverish you know, especially the middle class. It will lead to further redistribution. It will lead to more centralization. It will lead to more totalitarianism. That's basically, you know, so the powers that be are, you know, the guys really in power, or with, you know, with the biggest debt, or have also, you know, on the one hand side, the debts are also the biggest assets in the credit-based system. So they try to keep that alive. But as you mentioned before, you know, we have Trump, we had Brexit, we had, you know, Le Pen, we had, you know, all these secession movements, which we are witnessing. You know, we have fake news. So we can see that basically a trend is clearly visible, because the people at the bottom are questioning the official narrative. and they don't buy that stuff any longer, which is coming, which is being sold by the mass media. So I think, you know, even, you know, I never thought, you know, Le Pen, of course, you know, she was a national socialist. I mean, Macron, he's an international socialist. I mean, we are living in a socialistic, fascistic system anyway. But at the end of the day, you know, people really start to grasp it. And that movement is becoming bigger and bigger. And I think, you know, it's like you can blow out the candle, but you cannot blow out the fire. And so I think, you know, the fire is going to accelerate. And once the wind is blowing into it, then it, you know, will be a big, you know,
a big mess.
Absolutely.
Now, you said something about redistribution. And what I want to know, you're a pretty smart guy, okay? I want to know, whenever they go through redistribution, the middle class always end up with less, and the rich always end up with more. Is that what we're calling redistribution now, where we're more like Robin Hood stealing from the poor and giving to the rich?
Well, I think, you know, it's more that we are stealing from the middle class, and we give it on the one hand side. You know, the government is feeding, you know, the poor at the bottom, the guys who basically gave up, or they don't see, you know, but at the end of the day, a lot of people gave up. That's why they accept food vouchers and all that stuff. I mean, you have, what, 40 million Americans on food vouchers. We called it, you know, in Germany during the Weimar Republic, you had Suppenküchen, you know, 40 million, basically that's half of the German population. I mean, it's just huge. And, you know, we have unemployment rates, the youths in the Eurozone, you know, more than 50%. So, yeah, it's... you know, so the state is basically feeding the bottom so that they don't see riots and so on. But the only guys who really have to pay for it are the guys in the middle, the middle class. And, you know, when you own assets, I mean, look at the stock market. I mean, you know, in the Dow and the S&P 500, we are going, you know, from record highs to record highs. You know, there is no real economy. There is no, you know, it's not, we don't have markets. We have central banks, or let's call it a casino. It's a big gamble. And that's where we are. And in the future, I believe a lot of people will realize, you know, that this, you know, once you have to stop the gamble and you have to restart the whole system. And I think that's what is coming. We don't know exactly when, but I truly believe we are in the transition period over the coming years. And, you know, a deflationary collapse or a hyperinflation basically can happen at any time. We had 56 hyperinflations in the 20th century. So, you know, once it kicks in, it goes extremely quick.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the Fed, in our case, our central bank, they're going to raise rates mostly. Even though the indicators are leading they won't, I believe they will raise rates in June. And, of course, they've raised rates into every recession over the last 50 years. So why would I expect this time to be different? I mean, they're just a bunch of blind economists, as far as I'm concerned. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, these guys, they, you know, they never worked a single day, most of them. And they belong to a crowd which, you know, which has a kind of mental disorder. Because I still believe, you know, if you truly believe that you are so smart and that you are such a wise guy that you can, you know, force people to tell them what they have to do, what they have to think, you know, what makes them happy, what is best for them, you know. I think these kind of people, they definitely have, you know, I mean, they're mentally, you know.
They're deranged, and they refuse to allow the markets. It's the same as I talk about all the time, you know. I say this market's in a bubble, but they won't tell you until 10 years from now. So you see, we told you it was a bubble, but of course, we already know that. We're living through it, and they've done so much damage. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. But the first one I know is, don't these people realize that if you destroy the middle class, you've destroyed the entire economy? And that will be my question to my man, my friend, Claudio Graus from globalgold.com, as well as the Mrs. Institute in Alabama. How Switzerland and Alabama get together, we'll never know. But plus the author of a couple of books, and always great to have Claudio on, because he really just brings it in from his standpoint. And of course, he's from the central part of Sweden. We'll be back after the break with more from Claudio. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, libertytalk.fm. We'll get you to download the show every day, including the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We'll be back right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back. We'll be right back. show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Claudio Gross from Global Gold, as well as the Mrs. Institute and a million other things. And so, Claudio, before we went to the break, I said, don't they realize that by destroying the middle class, they destroy the world? I mean, without the middle class, nobody makes any real money after that. Don't they understand that?
We have seen those kind of, what we are going through is basically, it's unprecedented in history. You know, the low interest rates, you know, the lowest in 5,000 years. And at the same time, people have forgotten that savings and investments are the basis for a sound economy and not consumption and debt. And when we look into the East, you know, we had, you know, the Soviet Union, which basically had the same agenda. They also thought that they control everything from the top. And they never, you know, they never wanted to have a middle class. We are really going, I mean, that's what we can see with the cashless society. That's what we can see, you know, with freedom of speech taking away, that we have more rules and regulations coming up, destroying the small and mid-sized businesses, empowering multinational companies, which basically can lean out money, you know, at almost zero interest rates and buy up the competition. They are really, these are the centralizers. They believe that they are, you know, the smartest people on earth, and they use, you know, political lobby and the state to fulfill their, their agenda. But I think, when we go back, you know, thousands of years, then we always had, you know, a ruler and you had a lot of slaves. And I think that's, you know, basically that's the new world order, which wants to go in the same direction. But I don't believe that they are going to succeed because as we can see, you know, I mean, it's really, you know, people are not that dumb. People are not that stupid. And, you know, we are all, it's a system of collective corruption and we are in that. And so people hope it will get better. But I think over the last few years, a lot of people already realized, and that's also what, you know, for example, the Mises guys told me from the Mises Institute, you know, since 2008, they had a huge spike. Before it was, you know, pretty quiet. But then in 2008, basically, that was accelerating, that people were looking for new ideas. They were looking for new theories, you know, how an economy is working. So that was a huge push for Mises and also for the Austrian economics, which is, of course, you know, it's the individual stands in the center, and they are fully aware that you cannot steer and control the individual from the top. It's impossible. So it will never work. And we have seen, you know, these, you know, empires collapse. And we had a lot of empires in the past. They, you know, became strong with a strong currency. And then they, you know, moved into corruption and an acceleration of power, a centralization of power. Basically, then they, you know, they started to destroy the currency. And all of these empires, they collapsed when the currency was not gold. And, you know, it went down to silver and then to copper. At the end,
It'll be rocks.
That's the good stuff with the internet. You know, the internet is the Gutenberg press. So, you know, history. I mean, as long as the people have no clue about the history, and unfortunately, I need to say that most of the people, they have really no clue about history. And when they have a clue about history, then they learn, they have been taught at the universities, which is extremely, history has been written by the winners, but that doesn't mean that it is the truth. And I think now with the internet, you have everything on your fingerprints, and people can start their research. And that's why we also see all these alternative news pages are popping up. And we see, you know, the Wall Street Journal and CNN and all those mass media channels. I mean, they're really losing the crowd. And so overall, I'm still positive, you know, for the mid and long run that that the people will wake up. Of course, in the meantime, it's going down. And I think the only way you really can, I mean, one of the best way to protect you against such a crisis is, you know, to go back what really has always been money for 5,000 years. And that is physical gold and silver. It has always, I mean, even during the Roman Empire, an ounce of gold purchased you and a fine tunica. And today with an ounce of gold, you still can buy a tailor-made suit. So, you know, gold always kept the purchasing power. And even when you look at, you know, let's say back in 1972, for example, with $100,000, you were able to buy 1,724 ounces of gold. If you would just have let them there, you know, they would be worth now 2.1 million. And today, if you have $100,000, you can buy 82 ounces of gold. So it just shows, you know, gold is really also a store of value. And you can even listen to Greenspan, for example, who mentioned, you know, over the past few years, several times, you know, that gold is money and that gold is the only currency and the ultimative currency, which is always accepted. Especially, you know, in a harsh crisis scenario, and that's what we are dealing with in the future.
Well, it cannot be as manipulated as the fiat currency, which I think is, you know, if we go back to 1913 in the creation of our Fed, or we can go back to the 1600s for the central banks in England. I mean, to me, now again, this depends on who you believe and how you read it, but to me, it sounds like their whole objective was to wipe out everybody and grab all the money for themselves. That's what it sounds like. Is that crazy or is that potential or what do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think even Greenspan, you know, in his famous essay back in 63, he wrote that gold is the only way that can protect you from government confiscation and that they cannot steal your wealth through inflation. So, you know, I mean, this is all out. And, of course, you know, we had, you know, it's great. You know, we had a huge credit. I mean, since 1971, basically, look at the total debt of the United States, which stands today, what, 20 trillions. That's the funded ones. The unfunded liabilities, 220 trillions. And so it has been built up. 98.5% of that official debt has been built up since 1971. So we had a huge, massive credit injection, you know, and people had a huge party for a long time. But, you know, every party is coming to an end. And that's where we are right now. The authorities or the powers that be or the establishment, they can keep it together by, you know, trying to oppress the people, by, you know, implementing martial law and all that stuff, by trying to control, you know, capital controls, cashless society and so on. But, you know, it just buys some time, but it will not change anything when it comes to the outcome.
All right. Well, they definitely want us cashless because then you can't really tell how much you're trying to manipulate. But, you know, it's a shame because they've gotten away with it for so long. And I think the other big problem, Claudio, is the fractional banking. Because not only do the central banks have the ability to create money, but banks create money because, first of all, I think I said this before, but they don't have the reserves anyways. I don't care what anybody says. Nobody could pass that stress test, number one. Number two, even if they do have the reserves, they're still lending out 9-to-1. So they're still creating more money that doesn't really exist, which really just takes money out of my pocket. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the fractional reserve banking goes back to the ancient, you know, the origin of the banking system goes back to ancient Greece. You know, I think 300 before Christ, you had, you know, the first, I mean, it back then it was not wise to run around with a lot of gold and silver. So people were trying to find a secure place. So they brought it to the temples and then, you know, to the goldsmiths because they had the infrastructure to protect the assets. And then, of course, you know, the goldsmiths, they realized that not everyone is picking. I mean, so the people brought their gold to the depository or to the goldsmiths. And in return, they received a warehouse receipt for that amount of gold. That also how paper money came into existence. And then basically one of the guys, he realized, oh, not everyone is picking up their gold. So basically I can, you know, lean out physical gold, which he wasn't allowed to. Or I can issue more paper claims and earn an interest on that, which he was also not allowed to do. And that guy has been, you know, caught 300 before Christ, and he brought to court, and he was punished. And that's, you know, that basically was the fractional reserve banking. And back then it was a fraud, and today it's the system. So, you know, when somebody's depositing $1 million on a bank account, I mean, and now Eurozone has 1% minimum requirements, so they can, out of $1 million, they basically can create $100 million additional credit and earn an interest on something they just created out of nothing. And this is just, you know, I mean, that is leading to inflation, and that's why prices are skyrocketing, and that's why we are not allowed, we cannot save money. You know, I mean, back up to 1815, when the whole world basically was on a gold standard, I mean, the purchasing power of money was increasing because it was still linked to gold, not always 100%, but, you know, at the beginning, in the 1600, an ounce of gold purchased less and then announced in 1700 or 1800.
Look at it. Always look. We know that they screw us on inflation. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Claudio Grouse from Global Gold, also the Mrs. Institute. Is there a Mr. Institute? And the Mrs. Institute. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. LibertyTalk.fm can help you get the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends with Xander. Bubba Show with Claudio. We're going to stop out here for a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit how Switzerland became the neutral party of the world during World War II. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Claudio Grouse from Global Gold, from the Mrs. Institute, author, article writer, libertarian, the whole works. But so Claudio, first question I want to ask you, I want to talk a little bit about World War II, but how did Switzerland become Switzerland, and how did they get like in the middle and kind of playing both ends? That's what I'd like to know. Can you help us out there?
Sure, you know, I mean, that's my personal opinion. I was, of course, during the Second World War, I was not around because I was born in 1971. So basically, you know, when Nixon went off the gold standard. But so I have, you know, studied in the past, you know, several, you know, historical books. I like to talk to interesting people who are also familiar, you know, and studying history. And so what can be said, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the way I see it is, you know, Switzerland has become such a successful nation because of our decentralized political system, because the Swiss people are the sovereign and which is limiting the power of the politicians, because we had, you know, 26 states. You know, Switzerland consists of 26 states, and each state has, you know, we have 3,200 municipalities, and so we always had the bottom-up approach. We always had the principles of subsidiarity, so that, you know, the municipalities still up to today, they are responsible for taxation, you know, the education system, for healthcare, and so on. That's on the municipality and state level, and the central state never had a lot of power. You know, we know that we never had a king, we never had a president. We have seven of these guys. So the political stability and, you know, less corruption, less power hungry politicians, because we avoided that. The Swiss, basically, Switzerland became such a successful nation. And
how did they stay neutral throughout the basically World War II? I mean, they were really, I mean, they did things for the Germans. They did things for everybody. I mean, they were, and they became, basically, they became the world's storage locker of money and goods, okay. Right?
Well, I think, you know, most of that one is, as far as I know, it's over exaggerating. First of all, you know, Switzerland always has been, you know, since the Congress in Vienna, I think 1815, it has been decided that Switzerland stays an armed neutral nation. You know, between the powers of France and the Russians and the KOK, you know, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire back then, because Switzerland had always been, you know, strategically important in the center of Europe. You know, the axis between the north and the south. So, beginning of the Second World War, I mean, you know, we were surrounded by the enemies completely, 100%. You know, we had a population of 4.2 million. We had an army of 440,000 soldiers, plus 150,000 soldiers above 60 and below 18 years, plus 200,000 people in the community service aid. So it was also clear that the overwhelming majority of the Swiss would fight the Nazis to the last man standing. You know, we had a great leader back then, General Guizon, because in war times, you know, the general is taking over. And then, you know, back then, the leader of the Swiss had only two goals: to keep Switzerland sovereign and independent. And he even, you know, planned to give up 80% of Switzerland and to establish a Red Army in the Swiss Alps, in which the Swiss would have been capable to fight for years and to destroy the strategically important Gotthard Tunnel, the axis from north to south, where we had, you know, a lot of German and Italian, not troops, because it wasn't allowed to have military troops through it, but we had, you know, wounded people, they had food, stuff like this, but no troops, no military equipment was allowed to go through through the Gotthard Tunnel. So, but, you know, for the Germans and the Italians, it was an interesting stuff. At the same time, you know, Switzerland, so we had to trade, we had to survive somehow. But what can be said is, you know, that the Swiss were always against Nazi Germany. We were not the guys going to see Hitler in Berchtesgaden. I mean, the Brits did that. You know, you had a lot of American power people. They were very much in love with Germans and this kind of national socialism. But the Swiss, they knew exactly, you know, what's going on. And so for us, it was always clear that we, you know, if Nazi Germany would win, that all the values which represented Switzerland, decentralization, four different languages, you know, with different cultures within a very small territory, that this would be completely destroyed by, or it's going against the values of the Swiss people as such. And what can also be said is so that the trade, you know, we had to trade because we had not enough food, we had no coal, you know, we needed resources to keep our industry also running. So, I mean, all the trades that has been controlled, whatever came into Switzerland and out of Switzerland, the Nazis knew exactly what it was, and the Allies, they also knew it.
Well, and didn't our? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish. I apologize. Please. I'm not cutting. Go ahead.
No problem. I mean, okay. So, I mean, first of all, you know, that's the point. So, I mean, we never smuggled. I mean, we traded roughly 1.35 billion with Germany. So there was 0.6 of their military budget, and we traded at the same time 1.6 billion with the Allies. The Swiss franc was the only currency convertible in gold and became the trading currencies for the Nazis, for the Allies, as well as the neutral states. So all these nations, they didn't want to trade in US dollars or Deutschmark. So all these nations basically exchanged, you know, the Swiss franc into gold during the war. And the Swiss franc became, because it was the only in gold convertible currency back then. And so, you know, we were forced to become the trading currency. But and now just let me give you, you know, one good point. When we look at the gold reserves, for example, because it has always been said that the Swiss built up their gold reserves during the Second World War. So at the beginning in 1939, the gold reserves of Switzerland stood at 2.8 billion. At the end of the war, the gold reserves stood at 4.6 billion, including 2.2 billion gold purchased from the Allies, which have been blocked in the States. So if we now deduct from the 4.6 billion, the 2.2 billion of the gold purchased in the States, we had only 2.38 billion left, meaning approximately 15% less gold than before the war. And the gold we had was not Nazi or Jewish gold, it was U.S. gold.
Well, but of course, Sweden was a big help to the Jews in during World War II as well, and helped them get through. Did they not?
Sweden or Switzerland?
Did I make a mistake? The Swedes, right? Sweden. I'm sorry.
Switzerland.
Right.
Okay. Let's bring it to okay. Let's come up to the Jewish question. So first of all, you know, I mean, the Swiss were never anti-Semites. So we even had, you know, even during the war, I mean, we had, you know, Swiss military officer, they were educating, you know, the people in a Thomistic way to fight anti-Semitism. So they came up, you know, with that's the thesis which is spread, you know, amongst the masses about the Jews, for example. And they basically came with the antithesis, saying, you know, that this why it's not right, why it's not correct, and so on. We still have a huge Jewish community still in Switzerland. You know, I mean, they can walk around with the kippahs. You know, they can also walk around. You know, the Orthodox Jews, they don't need to be afraid. So, I mean, the Swiss back then, they never have been anti-Semites. And when our Swiss politicians tried to seal the border because of food shortage, and, you know, they called it that the boat is full, We had private Swiss individuals which were helping, especially Jews, and they were hiding them at home because they thought, you know, that this, they knew what's going on. They all knew what's going on. You know, the Swiss always took the extermination of the Jews serious since 1939, when the first rumors came up. And, you know, in this regard, I think it's important that, for example, in 9th of July in 1938, a conference in Evian, you know, was organized on the request by President Roosevelt, involving 32 nations. And those countries back then did not agree to allow Jews into their own nations. Also, the future of the Jews looked grim back then already. So not even the US nor the UK accepted, you know, having supporting the exodus out of Germany. In 1941, the first reports about Jewish deportation into concentration camps were also disclosed. In 1941, the World Jewish Congress said that the reports about the extermination of Jews are not credible. Interesting. In 1943, there was another conference taking place in Bermuda where the Allies refused to help the Jews. They did not even allow to bomb railway tracks going to the concentration camps. So, I mean, you know, what can be said is that approximately 10% of all the German Jews fled into or through Switzerland. Also, France or the Benelux would have been much closer. So, you know, I think... When it comes to that, I mean, of course, you know, every coin has two sides. But in general and overall, I mean, the attack we have witnessed under the Clinton administration in the 90s and the World Jewish Congress, when they attacked us and saying, you know, that we were becoming a wealthy nation because of the Second World War, I mean, it's complete nonsense.
Well, I mean, of course they had to deliver nonsense. What the hell else are they good for? I mean, you know, you have to blame it on somebody else, don't you? I mean, you can't possibly, you know, look, I'm under the opinion, just off that topic for a moment, I'm under the opinion that that there's not enough gold in the world to cover the amount of paper gold that they're trying to sell and put out there right now. So I think there's a lot bigger problems than anything. And of course, this could be, if it wasn't nuclear, it could be World War III, because you've got, you know, a lot of people looking at things. But at the end of the day, we do not have anywhere near, in my opinion, again, enough gold to cover the paper gold that's out there. We are with Claudio Grass from Global Gold, also the Mises Institute in Alabama, Switzerland and Alabama. That must be another safe haven. No, just kidding. And he's also an author and really a pretty smart guy. So we're going to come back with Claudio after the break and talk some more. But this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, LibertyTalk.fm. And my man Claudio is a liberty guy. He's a libertarian. LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the Bubba Show as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Claudio Grass from Global Gold. GlobalGold.com or GlobalGold.something?
GlobalGold.ch.
See, I knew I was wrong. I thought it was CH. GlobalGold.ch. Claudio Grass will be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Claudio Grass, GlobalGold.ch. Also, Mises Institute in Alabama, also author of Safe Haven, also writes all over the place, also really smart when it comes to gold. And we were talking a little bit about World War II. And so, Claudio, you know, again, you hear these rumors about, you know, who's got the gold and what they've done. And, of course, there's been some, you know, some bad rumors about, you know, what goes on there. And, of course, I don't think they got a much better name in the movie The Wolf of Wall Street either, as Switzerland. But in relating to World War II, so they were basically the neutral point for everything, right? That's where the League of Nations met and everything else, correct?
Yes, I mean, you know, Switzerland was really, I mean, we had all the spies were sitting also in Switzerland. It was a neutral nation, so it was, you know, you had the Dulles was over here, you had Nazi spies, you had, you know, the French spies. So we had, you know, the BITS, but the banks of the banks was in Switzerland. I still believe, you know, it was in Switzerland because, yeah, I mean, look at also the United Nations. I mean, they came to Switzerland because we were neutral and we had not a totalitarian government style. I think that was more the motivation. It was not that, you know, all the crooks basically came to Switzerland because they thought that we support the crooks. I mean, you know, of course, you know, not, we also made our mistakes and we also had, you know, industrialists which were which were trying to deal much more with the Germans, but they, you know, they also have been, I mean, they were pushed back. And as I said, you know, the real guys who really steered Switzerland through Second World War has not been a politician. It was our French general from the French speaking part, and he always knew. I mean, we, you know, at the end of the day, we have to defend our nation, and we have to make sure that we are not, that the Nazis are not going to win, whatever the outcome will be.
Now, you know, we've got, obviously, you know, a lot of things have changed over time, and of course the biggest change has been the more control by the central banks and by government and those things, and I think that myself has done more damage than anything else to the overall world economy. I think if you took the IMF and the World Bank and the central banks, if you could crumble them all up in a ball and get rid of them, I think we'd be in a hell of a lot better shape. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. No. Of course, I mean, you know, I think, you know, that's why I truly believe, you know, a lot of powers that be are trying to blackmail, you know, Switzerland, or to destroy the reputation of Switzerland, because at the end of the day, I still believe that the model of Switzerland would be a model for the rest of the world. You know, what the people need to understand is that we need more decentralization, and that, you know, this centralized... all this central planning and that centralization just leads to more totalitarianism, and Switzerland would be a great example. I mean, even in the States, I mean, look at what's going on over there. I mean, I think there is really, you know, a civil war building up, because you have the left, which is completely brainwashed. You have the Jaus, you know, which has been brainwashed at the universities as well. They're not even capable to have a serious discussion. And on the other side, you have all the Americans, you know, which are a bit, you know, more conservative, which have enough of the system. So that is going, you know, so Trump is dividing the states, and that's what we can see in many other countries as well.
Well, Trump isn't really the Zionist, right? They're divided because of him, but he's not the guy who's trying to divide them, right?
Can you say that again?
I said they're becoming divided because we've got people that don't believe that you should support the office, not necessarily the man. So the left is really separating, and it's not Trump who's trying to divide him. It's actually the parties that are trying to split because of that.
Oh, sure. I mean, as I, you know, I truly believe that all the establishment medias, and, you know, that the deep state and the Democrat, I mean, they want to keep the status quo. And of course, Trump is a risk when it comes to that. And so that's why they want to kick him out, to bring him down, because he is not predictable. As I say, Trump is not the Messiah, but of course, you know, the points he's bringing up, it means he's also dividing the American people. And at the end of the day, if you divide something, you know, you can start fighting each other, or you can go into a secession modus. And that I really believe, I really hope, you know, that the Americans will start, you know, with secession movements in the future. You know, Texas secede from the states, from centralized Washington, even California. You know, if they want to have a communistic, socialistic state order, I mean, then let's let them go for that. But then they have to finance it themselves. And if you have other states which are more conservative and, you know, have less socialistic or communistic or collectivistic ideas, then let them secede and let them go their own way. And then even within the states, you know, go down when it comes to, you know, go back to the principles of subsidiarity. And I believe this is a model which can be used, you know, all over the world at the end of the day.
I mean, the problem is obviously the big separation that we've seen here. And of course, I think it does all relate back to what we kind of opened up with, which is the meddling and the fidgeting of the central banks and the damage that they create. What's your take on the cryptocurrency world, Claudio? Do you think that's a viable world? Now, of course, the government will never let it be viable because they want to get their share and they want to control it. But obviously, the theory behind it is that no government control. What are your thoughts of the cryptocurrency world?
Well, you know, first of all, I love that the fact that cryptocurrencies are putting the existing monetary system under pressure. I mean, it's an alternative currency, and it's not controlled by the government. So I think that's overall positive. At the same time, I also believe that, you know, in the future with more technology and so on, most likely paper money is going to be become less and less used, and people might use then cryptocurrencies in the future. I don't see it as a store of value. I think right now, when we look at the cryptocurrency prices, I mean, they moved, they spiked tremendously, but that also reflects that it's a kind of, you know, especially when it comes, you know, the price driver, and I'm not a specialist when it comes to cryptocurrencies, but what I was told is that the price driver is mainly came from China because of capital exchange control and so on. And I think, you know, in the future, when we're going to see more capital exchange control, that cryptocurrencies can even spike higher up. But it has not an intrinsic value from my point of view. It needs to be backed by something.
it's backed by whoever invented it. I don't quite get it myself. So that's why I asked you. But so we look at gold, and again, gold's a great hard asset to own, regardless. Okay, you know, I'm not a big believer of the fear deal, the whole thing. I mean, I believe it's a currency. Now, what do you think of gold? Is the bear market over, in your opinion? Are we now headed towards the other side now? Does it look like we're starting to move up again? Or do you think there's maybe a little bit more down action? What do you think?
Well, you know, for me, I mean, what really can be said is, I mean, overall, I believe, you know, the physical gold demand is sound. Even when we had, you know, Q1 this year was 18% down versus Q1 in 2016. But, you know, the supply and demand is balanced. So what is coming through recycling and mining is being absorbed by the market through investment, you know, central banks purchasing and ETFs. But, you know, what we are still witnessing for the past 4 months is that it's really quiet in the retail gold market, and that people are still waiting for a clear signal. You know, there's a lot of noise. And all when we look at the prices, you know, that the dollar is going down, the euro went up of the Macron and so on. I mean, this is short-term noise, and it's politically motivated, but it has nothing to do with fundamentals from my point of view. And so, I mean, you know, important to know is that today, you know, 0.3% of total financial assets on a global scale are in gold, meaning, you know, coins, bars, ETFs and mining shares. Back in 1981, we stood at 8%, which is, you know, 26 times higher. And on average, during the last three decades, we stood at 1.5%. So that's also five times higher.
Well, there you go. And that's my man, my friend. I got to come out to Switzerland and see you. Claudio Grass from globalgold.ch, also Mrs. Institute in Alabama, also the author of many books. And Claudio, I love having you on. You're really great, and I can't wait to have you back on again, because there's obviously so much more I can talk to you about. But thanks for today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Todd. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, Claudio Grass from Global Gold and .ch, and also the Mrs. Institute and Safe Haven, and a lot of things. This is the Bubba Show. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you so much. Have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.